Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production.
Now available on Apple Podcasts,
Podcast One, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
From Hollywood, California, by way of the Broken Skull Ranch, this is the Steve Austin Show.
Give me a hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Now, here's Steve Austin.
Yeah, man, I got Lane Johnson sitting right in front of me over here at the studio, Marina Del Rey, California. Starting right tackle three times, Pro Bowl, right tackle for Philadelphia Eagles. Welcome to the crib.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, you never would have guessed it would have been here, but damn it, it's here.
Finally. What's up?
Not a whole lot. Kind of resting right now. We don't start back with OTAs till April, late April. So right now it's fun time.
Hey, take a breath of fresh air because we were bullshitting about 5-10 minutes before everybody got all quiet when we hit that record button. It's funny how the dynamic changes. What we got going on in the room here, because a couple people rolling cameras. There's an NFL squad following you. What are we doing here? I mean, you're doing my podcast because you and me have been in touch for a while.
I don't know what I'm doing here. That man right there schedules all my stuff right there. His name's Brian. We got the NFL in here, getting that content going. I got my trainer, Gabe, so wherever I go, he goes. He makes sure I don't fuck up. So that's my dude right there.
That's your trainer?
That's my trainer.
Oh, because I've been on your Instagram account. I've been wanting to ask you some questions.
All
so
right.
I'll get a chance
because right,
I
go.
Guess some of it was done with you.
Yeah.
So the football season's over. You're out here in L.A., so you're doing content, but obviously you're here to take care of some business. I heard that yesterday you was in San Diego getting fitted for some clubs.
Yeah, I'm not very good at golf.
And we went, dude.
Hey,
tell me about it.
It was bad. It's really bad.
I'm really bad.
It's really fucking frustrating, too, because everything we do is with, you know, reactionary, and it's just you and a club.
How often do you play?
Never. Every time, or usually when I go, it's with a buddy, or I'll be drinking in the – I'll putt every now and then, fuck around, but taking it serious.
So no. Then what was the impetus or the motivation to go get fitted for clubs if you don't ever play?
He plays. He loves it. Hey.
So that was a hookup.
There we go.
So what'd they say when your big ass goes in there? Because they don't fit a whole lot. Were you 6'6"?
Well, they asked me what my size was, or my shoe size was, and they said, I said 16. Well, we ain't got that. And they said, well, what's your glove size? Well, a 4X. He said, well, we ain't got that either, so you're fucked. So I went out there and started slicing that sumbitch just like I normally do. And then when I got started putt, that's what I take kind of serious because I'm decent at it. It's kind of hard to mess that up. So I went out there and sunk about 5 straight and called it a day.
So are you gonna make it?
Man, I like dabbling. It's just something if I could, you know, be decent at it in my spare time so I can go out there and have a, you know, not embarrass myself, I'd like to do that.
Yeah, but here's the thing, man. Like, I'm much older than you since you're still in your formative years and so you're networking. You're out there making deals.
Trying to make a name.
Man, yes, you are making a name. But at 29, you got a lot of years ahead of you for yourself. It's something that you can kind of go out there and half-ass and, hello, just have fun. Man, that's a great place to just network and make relationships and form business
deals. If it ain't doing that, I like to fish. That's what I like doing.
I was going to ask you about fishing.
Yeah.
But when you're out there on the golf course, if it ain't during the season, you're out there drinking. I mean, you like to drink beer out there?
Hey, don't ask me dumbass questions. I only had somebody ask me a dumbass question today. I didn't think it was going to come from you.
Hey, what are you weighing right now?
About 310.
310. He's 6'6", 310. Got his trainer standing next by and got cameras rolling. Don't think I won't jump across his putting my foot up in your ass.
Hey, walk it dry?
Yeah.
And walk it dry?
I will stomp a mud hole in your ass and walk it dry. Man, that's my problem. I go out there with my wife. There's a bunch of golf courses out there. We're in northern Nevada. We're by Las Vegas. And we get out there, and we ain't worth a flying shit. And, you know, I'll get a couple beers in, you know, and then it really goes to hell.
Yeah.
My problem is I'm so competitive, I think just because I'm an athlete.
You can't turn it off.
I should be good at anything I do. But it don't happen like that with a ball and a stick.
That pride will hit you in the face when it comes to that sport.
Right when I'm at my lowest, my wife will get out there.
And fucking, you know, crank one straight?
No. You know, like go out there and you take a couple of warm-up swings, and then all of a sudden you go for the real swing, and she'll miss it and spin around like a helicopter twice.
Make you feel a little bit better about yourself? Shit, I'm bad, but hey, I ain't that bad.
I'm over here laughing my ass off, but, you know, like I'll be ready to tee off, and then all of a sudden there'll be nobody out there, nobody pressuring us in any way, and all of a sudden I'm about to tee off, and here comes about 4, 5, 6 people, and the pressure's on. And I'm you know, I'm getting in shape for my shows, but I'm about halfway jacked up, so I'm figuring, you know, it's all technique. Could you see them little ectomorphs out there that weigh about 160 just pound that thing? So I'm just going to just crush it. And I'll tip that summit in a roll about 6-8 feet, and it'll be one of those.
That's what I was doing yesterday. I don't know, it's kind of, they're so fluid, and we're all we've been doing is cranking weights our whole life. We're fucking stiff, and it's hard to get, I guess, I don't know, to be smooth with it.
I got mulligan on top of mulligan. Hey, you growing up in Groveton, Texas, and I guess that'd be considered East Texas, right?
It's East Texas.
What's the population of that town?
Probably 600. I graduated with 30, 33, 35.
I graduated with 110 out of Edna. And y'all was straight up 1A.
1A. Yeah, they were 2A back in the 80s, 90s. I think they're 2A now since it moved up. But when I was playing, we were 1A.
But that was regular football. I wasn't a six man.
No. We played both ways.
So, dude, I won't go over your whole history from top to bottom, but did you play quarterback just because you was the biggest, best athlete on the team?
Yep.
Was that story?
Yep. So started that in junior high, and then so I went to a different junior high school. And when I went there, I mean, basketball was the thing. So I grew up playing a lot of basketball, and then started playing football in seventh grade. And my dad played quarterback. That's what he did. He's a country dude. He'd be pretty entertaining.
Art East Rodeo. Yeah.
So country dude. Yeah. Uh-huh. He was on the ghillie scene back in the day. So.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, that's what he did. So, yep. Other than that, man, I never thought I'd be playing tackle. Started all that was when I went to OU and I played tight end. That's when you get that physicality because you go there, man, it's either play or you got to transfer somewhere else. So, man, I wasn't playing, and one of our guys got hurt, and then next thing I know, I was playing defensive end at the time. I was about 275, 280, and here I am.
Yeah, but it wasn't that. It was I think he was walking around, and Josh Heupel.
Yeah, it was Heupel. Yeah, he asked
hey, man, dude, what are you weighing? And you're like 280.
I said, holy shit. Yeah, so if you're going to be a rotational guy at DN, I mean, what they're doing now is they're getting all these ex-tight ends, big, long, lanky guys, and beefing up ex-basketball players, and that's what kind of tackle is going to now.
Hey, man, but I was watching you run down the field as a quarterback, man, for Groveton, man. You had some wheels on you, and you 4.72 at the combine. I mean,
I ran speedy. Yeah, I was never, like I said, I was never an offensive lineman. I was always a skill guy. So growing up, I mean, in high school, I ran the quarter, did shot put. Yeah, so shot put, just my buddies were out there fucking around. They weren't very good. And I went out there and chucked it, and they said, well, you're going to be in district next week. Goddamn, we end up going to state and that. And so, yeah, I mean, it's crazy. It's just a small town. You easily get overlooked by those powerhouses, Dallas and those big schools. And shit, you go to JUCO, man, it's
Hey, man, before
survival.
We go to JUCO, I got a story for you because, like, you wouldn't plan on throwing a shot put. Why didn't you throw the discus with your big-ass long arms? You could have really whipped them out there.
I don't know. Just never did.
Hey, dude, when I was in junior high, that's when you could start running track at our school. And I figured, hey, man, I got some pretty good endurance. I'm going to be a long-distance runner. And so I'm sitting there. It's a grass track. I'm running around that son of a bitch, my tongue hanging out. And there's a dude over there named Russell Bitter. And he was throwing a discus, red in the face. Like, man, what the fuck is this guy doing? I said, yeah, that might be easier than running around this track. So I chucked it a couple times, and I threw it way farther than he did, so I started throwing the discus.
There you go.
I just figured you'd be a natural-born discus thrower.
Hey, we weren't that smart to think of that shit back in the day.
Hey, but going back to the JUCO days, you only played 1 year at Kilgore.
Yeah, so I knew my goal was either if I was going to get recruited there, I was going to walk on somewhere. I don't know if you've ever been to a junior. Oh, yeah, you did. You play. You know what
2 years.
It's survival.
You're damn right. It was an eye-opener for me.
Yeah. I went there first day, and there's, you have all these kids that you think signed, and I get there, and there's fucking 200 kids there. Line up. We're running. We're doing, It all hits you so fast. And these guys, a lot of these guys are Division I talent, can't make the grades, and, probably the best athletes I've ever played against. So it was, a lot of these guys are fucking, hood, gangster. They're hood. They're gangster. Different change of pace than where I was at.
Hey, man, I was down in South Texas, and I played running back, and I played linebacker on defense, but I was the running back, and when I was a senior, I was 205. Big for South Texas, 2A school. Well, my line was about 160, so it wasn't a whole lot of line up there. So I ran a 4.940. I wasn't fast enough to run east or west. So I ran north and south. Yeah. I was carrying motherfuckers down
fucking
the field.
Fucking Michael Allstott.
Yeah. So I figured, man, I graduated out of high school because you get all the letters, right? Or you can get some.
Yeah.
And they're just like.
Your parents go crazy. Look what we got in here today.
Oh, and they think it's for sure deal.
Hey, yeah. Man, no, that, hey, this is what they send to everybody.
Those are the bullshit letters. Yeah. Those are the ones that everybody gets.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, when it came down to it, I had a full ride from Wharton County Junior College or a half ride to Texas Lutheran College.
I know it's what
I can't do no half ride.
Yeah.
I ain't got the money, so I got to go full ride. So I played JUCO. I told my mom's best friend, I said, don't worry about it, Evelyn. I'll go to Wharton and make All-American a couple of years and go to a big school. shit, I found out, just like you said, there's either some guys that can't make the grade, and I'll leave it like that in a nice way.
Yeah.
And one dude up there in Tyler, he was dyslexic. And yeah. Ronnie Duxworth. He broke all of Marcus Dupree's rushing records. And all of a sudden, I get up there in JUCO, man, and I'm like, hey, man, I thought this shit was going to be easy. And it was a complete eye-opener for me. And I never was pro material, but as a high school kid.
It's intimidating as shit.
Well, I was dreaming of it.
You go there and sit, and reality hits you in your face.
Did you ever have the dreams of being, because, I mean, you was a good player, good quarterback, but then you're at Kilgore, then you go to OU. Did you think you can make it? Because you were still trying to find your way, going from tight end to offensive.
It wasn't until really my senior year I knew that I was going to be in the NFL.
Right.
And so going to my senior year, it was like, you know, he's a late day. We don't have enough film on him. We have 1 year at right tackle to see if he progresses. So I had that year to show what I was doing or what I was made of. So. Yeah, I mean, other than that, man, we worked it. We had a dude named Jerry Smith at A&M now, man. He worked the dog shit out of guys. And so he was tough. He commanded everybody to be tough. And if you weren't, you didn't last there long. So, I mean, spent 4 or 5 years with him, make you a changed man.
So why, you know, a guy come from East Texas. You know, I was born in Austin, Texas. My mother's from Guthrie, Oklahoma. So whether I cheer for the Sooners or the Texas Longhorns, I got street cred because I got lineage.
Yeah.
Right? So a guy from Texas, and why the University of Oklahoma? Great, you know, elite college, but why from a guy from Texas did you pick that school?
Well, I mean, I was begging guys out of high school. I was wanting to go to TCU. I would love to go to A&M. I would love to go to Texas. And I knew when I went to Kilgore, Texas was recruiting me some, but they don't really take JUCO guys. So after that, man, it was just really my high school coach played there, so he knew Merv Johnson, the recruiting coordinator. So what we would do during that summer, I knew I was either trying to get a scholarship or I was going to cat and mouse my way somewhere. And so I'd go visit OU, and on the way back home, I'd go visit TCU and say, well, OU's telling me this. And then I'd tell TCU, you know, that's how we did it. And so I got offered the day I signed with OU, I got offered in the morning by TCU. And my damn stepdad calls him and said, well, it's fucking 4th-and-1 on the goal line. Coach, what you going to do? He said he's about to go to TCU and then eventually end up signing. So, yeah.
So he's talking about cat and mouse, talking about just trying to work people. And
you know how they worked you. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Hey, so it felt good to pay it forward to him.
I can't remember the last time, you know, we talked, and that was a Skype conversation. I hate those, so I don't remember anything. But my cat and mouse deal was when I got signed in North Texas out of Wharton. You know, dude, from here to that door right there, I'm the fastest guy in this room. But beyond that, all bets are off. We're out there running 40s, and shit, the head coach has got this perplexed look on his face. And my real name back then was Williams. Mm-hmm. And he says, Williams, come here. And they recruited me as a linebacker, full scholarship. And I said, yeah, coach, what's up? And he goes, what's wrong? I said, nothing. He goes, you're running a 4.940. I said, yeah, what's wrong? He said, you coach at Wharton,
hell
you
yeah.
Run a 4.7.
Hell yeah.
I said, shit, coach, I ain't never run a 4.7 in my life.
Hey, them coaches, that's what they do. They go in that sumbitch, he's a 4.85. Hell, he's a 4.68 today. That's how it was. And usually they put in the magazines, if you were 205, hell, you were 220, an inch taller.
Williams, get out of here. Hey, I was down there at Wharton, and I lived in Kilgore for a year.
Yep.
Speaking of the East Texas roots, and my brother was a student up there at the college. And I figured I'd go live with him for a summer and haul drilling mud, and that's what I did. So I was in there. I drive to Longview every day and work out at the gym. I was lifting heavy weights back in. So when I showed up at Wharton, I was in shit shape for cardio. Mm-hmm. So I had a deal where you had to run shit. I think it was a mile and 12 minutes. A mile and 12 minutes ain't shit if you're going to be a good football player.
Yeah.
And, you know, it gets hotter than shit down there about 6 miles south of Houston, a little bit on the humid side, especially when you've been drinking beer, hauling drilling mud, just pumping iron. And I was the last loneliest motherfucker out there. And everybody was standing, the whole team was standing there cheering me on. And I know some of them were saying, like, look at this stupid motherfucker with long blonde hair. And I thought I was going to die.
Hey, from that point on,
I finally ended up getting in shape.
Yeah.
Hey man, do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. And I bet it can be hard work. You know what's easy? bundling policies with GEICO. GEICO makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to GEICO.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's GEICO easy. Visit GEICO.com today. That's GEICO.com.
This is the Steve Austin Show.
Hey, when you went to OU, coming out of Kilgore, I mean, you obviously had the genetics, you know, from being tall as a high school kid, you're sprouting up, you're 220, you're starting to progress and mature. But when you get into that OU system, you know, how did the weight program change? Because you're hanging around with your trainer right now. Mm-hmm. Like, what changed? I mean, and what kind of caloric intake? What did y'all have access to?
Yeah,
because
you're
in an elite program.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot different
now.
And
you must win.
Yeah, so it's a lot different now. They have a lot more, I guess, resources. Like back then, you had limited meals, and you know, if you had extra pasta at fucking Olive Garden and you didn't pay for it, the NCAA was going to report on you. So, man, I got there, and there was my roommate at the time, Gabe Eichard, who played for the Titans for a little bit. He came in there as a tight end with me, and he went to center the year before I ever thought about moving. So I saw him gain from 250 to fucking 305 and pretty damn quick. And so I knew what was in store. So my thing was I wasn't playing, but everybody knew I was a freak of the team. Everybody knew I was some athlete. And so it was just a matter of time until I found my niche. And then, yeah, man, Jerry Schmidt, I mean, we get there, this dude, his explanation behind what he does. So we have about five different doors. There's one of them to a sand pit. There's one of them to the weight room. There's one of them to the track and field. He comes out this door, you know you're going to run stadiums and ramps. And, son, you'd be in that son of a bitch about – it starts at 5:30, you'd be in there at 5:20 just going, what the fuck is this dude about to bring to me? And he'd come out there and say, son, you don't know what the fuck's going to happen in the game. He said, you got to be ready for fucking anything. So that was life with him. And we did that – I mean, until you're playing, you're with him.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you're with that guy all year round. You're eating three meals a day. And if you didn't make weight, so – yeah, this is the funny shit. So I've seen guys weigh in butt-ass naked before workouts. If they don't make their weight, they're underweight. You have to stay there and drink protein shakes until you make it. And I've seen the guy weigh 288, and he had to be 300 that day. So I saw him drink fucking 12 pounds of shakes, made his weight, went out there and threw up. That's what life was, man. It was chaotic. And at that place, you have to win. And it was the best thing for me. Was I happy at the time? No. Was it frustrating? Yeah, Kilgore was frustrating. But looking back, I think that's what – kind of, it helped me in everything, adjusting to stuff.
What is your caloric intake right now, too? I mean, and like, what are you weighing right now?
310.
So what'd you weigh at the end of the season?
So my playing weight is 320, 325.
Okay. So what'd you back off on? I mean, what do you
–
What are you taking in, brother?
I don't have to eat all the time. So in the off season, it just feels good not to – you know, you're not on a regimen. But what we adjusted to, we went to this thing called the vertical diet, which is – pretty much bodybuilding.
Stan Efferding.
Yeah. So we met with him, have all those meals shipped to the house, and that, I mean, that's really what I ate. Just a lot of, you know, it's a lot of clean carbs, eliminate the sugar, eliminate the bullshit. You know, the ground beef, he says there's a lot more vitamins and nutrients in there.
Stan's a red meat guy.
Oh, I love just talking to him.
Yeah.
To be honest, I fucking love the weight room. I just love, and I'm a meathead. And I just love being around. That's all I've been around my whole life.
So what is the vertical diet when you're talking about clean carbs? Because you just talking about sweet potatoes?
Sweet potatoes,
amount?
Carbs. Lot the staple is white rice.
And you're trying to avoid sugar, right?
Trying to avoid sugar. He's real big on sodium intake. So
yes.
Yeah, sodium, you know, equates to blood volume, equates to oxygen. So he's real big on doing that. And actually, with the Eagles, we have a thing called leveling. So during training camp, they'll test your sweat, and they'll test how salty or sweaty you are. And if you don't replace that salt, you're going to lose a lot of weight, water weight, which is blood. You know, it's all ties in together. So, you know, as you get on to the upper echelons, you start seeing some pretty unique people. We've had that since I've been to the Eagles. And just hearing Stan and him talk about it, become more knowledgeable about it, so pretty cool.
What can you ballpark, you know, kind of what your caloric intake was if you were to guess?
At OU?
Right now. Where you're sitting, what are you trying to take in? I mean, for a guy your size, 4,000 calories, 5,000?
Yeah, it's around 5,500. If I'm trying to gain, I mean, it's fucking, hey, there is no limit.
Okay, so now that we're in off season, like, what are you doing with your body? I mean, now, what happened with the wheel? Because
I'll show you, yeah, about got taken off.
Yeah.
Second time.
That was nasty.
Yeah. still fucked up. So I have a lot of scar tissue here built up right now.
Did you get it fixed? What did they do?
I'm still fixing it. Yeah, it's you know, when you heal
but
that
you
ankle.
Did you have to get cut?
No surgery.
Okay.
No.
Oh, you're lucky.
No, I'm good.
Okay,
yeah,
good.
I'm good. Shit, I damn forgot the question. What the hell did you just ask me?
Oh, man, what are you doing with your body?
Oh, right now, so usually, man, after a season, I see, you know, I'm in the right tackle position, so I'm pushing off this one leg, and so my body becomes so, was it asymmetrical? I'm out of line. My quad's overfiring, my left side's not firing just because I'm in that position all the time. So really it's about getting your body back into, I guess, right posture, getting things firing correctly, and really with what he does, it's all premeditated. So, you know, you're not trying to rah-rah too fast during training camp. It's a slow, steady build, and you want to peak, you know, December, January, February, that's when you want to play your best football. So other than that, man, we're really big as far as what we lift, a lot of posterior chain, because with what we do, we sit on our ass all day. People are always on their phones. You get hunchback. People walk around with their back pockets touching. And so you got to get that shit fixed. So a lot of stuff, man. We do a lot of pulls. So we work a lot on that posterior chain. I think for me, I do a lot of reverse hypers just for my back. So just a lot of light stuff right now. We were doing some bodybuilding type stuff just to fuck around, try to look good.
Yeah, but you kind of have bodybuilding genetics. I mean, you're pretty genetically elite. Mm-hmm. Would you argue that?
Yeah, besides his hair. I mean, other than that, it's pretty damn good.
Dude, you didn't get the lifetime guarantee just like I did.
Hey, look like some hard-boiled eggs at this damn table.
Hey, man.
It is what it is.
When I first started losing my hair, I said, man, what the fuck am I going to do? Because just back in the day when everybody had to have long hair if you was going to be a pro wrestler. So I called a dude that broke me in because you always got to have a mentor, right? Just like JP kind of mentored you, right?
Yeah.
So I called him up. I said, hey, Chris, man. I said, I'm kind of starting to lose my hair. He goes, what do you think I should do? Well, he's just another dumbass wrestler. So what are you going to tell me? You know, some kind of life-changing, you know, advice, which I thought he had. But he goes, fuck, I don't know. So I went down to Hair Club for Men, and this blonde chick, I sat on a stool. She just started combing through my hair with these wooden sticks. And she was wearing rubber gloves. It was all professional and shit. And she goes, yeah, you know, we can move this over here. We'll put this over there. And I'm sitting there, and I ain't selling nothing, right? But I'm thinking, man, this is back in like 93. The technology ain't what it is today, nor what I know where it's at. But I'm like, ain't no way I'm getting no fucking hair plugs. So I started cutting my shit off.
Yeah, you get used to it.
I was listening to you tell a story, or I was reading about you telling a story. When your buddy finally had that come to Jesus moment with you when he said, hey, dude, what's up with the wig? And that's when you decided to shave your head.
He said, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah. So did it hurt your feelings, or was you, did you
run it? He saw a picture. It was a football picture. I think at OU. I think my senior year. He said, bro, are you balding? I said, fuck no. Goddamn.
Hey, but see, how bad does that crush you when you hear that?
It's the worst shit you ever hear.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting there. I'm taking another glance at the picture. I said, fuck, he's right. So after that, hey, you go first round. You got that pressure on you. I'm sitting on the bench, man. I'm just there's a picture of me, I think, at Tampa Bay my rookie year. My hair's all flopping. I just got a big-ass fucking bird's nest right here. I said, man, this shit's got to go. So after that, it was a wrap.
I was in a hotel. We was in Pittsburgh, as a matter of fact, and I was riding with Gold Dust. It was fixed to work Mellon Arena.
Dusty Rhodes?
Yep. The son, my mom went to high school with Dusty Rhodes in Austin, Texas. She was a senior when he was a freshman. And I was looking at myself, and when they brought me out of WCW, I had long hair, and I had a buzz cut like Bruce Willis did in Pulp Fiction. I know your movies. And so I had that buzz cut, and I didn't have the goatee yet, and I wasn't that menacing looking, you know, kind of baby face, kind of still. And I said, man, look at this shit. You know, and I had that you know, what do you call them? You call them something in one of your
cul-de-sacs.
Videos. Cul-de-sacs, man. I had them big-ass cul-de-sacs. And I said, man, fuck yes. I said, I ain't going nowhere. Let me just shave this shit off. And I got to the building. Everybody said, man, Steve, why'd you shave your hair off? Oh, fuck, it was that long anyway. What's the difference?
Yeah.
Then I grew that I started growing the stash, and then I had the connectors.
I had the hope. It started to come together.
It started to come together, and that's when I come up with the Stone Cold Steve Austin thing, so it ended up working for me. When did you decide to grow this shit in?
Well, I shaved that shit off one time, and I looked like a soft-shell turtle, son. Look like my
too chin. Much real estate.
Looked like my chin got shot off.
It did, because, man, when I take this shit off, I did a Longest Yard with Adam Sandler, and all of a sudden I'm thinking, okay, I'll do this movie, but I'm, you know, I only got a few lines
because
I don't like to memorize nothing. And they said, hey, Steve, to be a prison guard, you have to take the goatee off, and your mustache can only come down to here.
You look like Hitler.
And I'm thinking, no, I just look like an idiot. And so, and all of a sudden, man, I shaved my shit off, and then your mustache has to be trimmed, you know, to right, can't go below your lip, and I look like a fucking idiot. So, I grill, and that's when I met my wife at the World Gym, which is right down the road.
Yeah.
And my buddy was the guy that run the front desk, and he knew my wife just from a different gym. And she teaches special ed. And one of her students had brought a WWF calendar and hung it up. It was my month. And she recognized me, and she says to my buddy Dan, she goes, "Hey, is that that Stone?" Because she didn't watch wrestling. Yeah. "Is that that Stone Cold Steve Austin guy?" Because I didn't have my shit on. And he goes, "Yeah." And she said, "Do you think he'll come read to my kids?" "I don't know. Go ask him." So, when, of course, when I approached her, as she speaks now, it's like I was interrogating her like a damn cop on the side of the road or something like that. Anyway, you got another story?
No, I said, I bet you liked it. She didn't know shit about wrestling. That was pretty refreshing, huh?
That was good, yeah. Man, because I think we met at the perfect time.
Yeah.
And the fact that, you know, I think all teachers are special, but the fact that she was a special education teacher, man, I've been divorced a couple times. Yeah. Man, this is a match made in heaven because she understands me.
Yeah, you understand.
And communication is one of her strong suits. Yeah. And for me, I'm one of those guys.
I bottle my shit up and, hey, like to head on, talk every now and then.
Dude, after years of being on the road and sweeping shit underneath the carpet, we don't need to go into details.
Yeah.
My wife, hey, man, whatever's up, is she going to get to the bottom of, and we're straight.
Every stone's going to be unturned?
Yeah, she's good. The best thing that ever happened to me.
Today we're welcoming back IP Vanish to the show. So what is IP Vanish? IP Vanish is a virtual private network, a VPN for short. And a VPN is a super important tool that helps you safely browse the internet. You can use a VPN on your computers, tablets, phones, even things like your Fire Stick when you're streaming media. When you use a VPN, all your data is encrypted. What you're reading, what you're searching, what you're watching, whatever it is you're doing. That's important because what you're doing on the internet isn't my business, and it's no one else's business either. IPVanish helps you remain anonymous and secure on the internet. IPVanish is just $3.49 a month. For just $3.49 a month, or $27.99 a year, you can help protect your online privacy and security. Now, here's everything you need to know. Anonymous IP addresses. This means your personal IP address can't be tracked by anyone on the web. You can circumvent any online censorship. IPVanish has more than 1,500 servers in 70-plus locations. Get protection when using public Wi-Fi. Remember, with IPVanish, all your data is encrypted so no one can snoop on what you're doing. 24/7 support. Email them, chat with them, even call them. They're there to help. If you remember, these guys supported the show a few weeks ago. They've come back with an even better deal, wanting to offer something special for the new year. You're getting 65% off now. So go to ipvanish.com/Austin to claim your 65% savings. They have plans starting at $3.49 a month or $27.99 a year. This is the time to sign up. With our discount and their current promotion, you can get a VPN for 65% off their usual offering. IPVanish is the best of the best, even rated 4.7 out of 5 on Trustpilot, and that's with more than 6,000 reviews. Show these guys some love. They're repeat sponsors. Remember, it's IPVanish.com/Austin to get the deal and start protecting yourself online.
Tell me about the combine, because you blew the combine away. What, 2013 or was 2011? 13. And so you was the best at everything but the bench press. And here's this physical specimen. I love to watch a combine every year because I'm a football junkie.
That's how I was.
And then everything dries up. And then the Super Bowl happens because playoffs are already done in college. Yeah. You got the national championship. You got 2 weeks for the Super Bowl. Super Bowl's over, Jonestown, right? Mm-hmm. And so you ain't got no fix. Then all of a sudden they start playing a combine. So you go there, I'm just entranced by it, and they cover it, man. And they go over you guys with the microscopes. And I've had my share of injuries. Hell, if it wasn't for baling wire, duct tape, and pieces of bubble gum, I'd still be in pieces all over the world. But when they take you guys there, and those teams are looking to make a hell of an investment in their future.
Yeah.
But tell me about the pressure just going into that and how the process was for you.
Yeah.
And one more question on top of that. Did you go in with pressure on you, or would you just kind of footloose and fancy free because you didn't feel like you had anything to lose?
That was the easiest part because the biggest question mark for me is, can I go against SEC? They want to see me against other schools. So my combine was really the Senior Bowl. So I had a great week there, and I knew going to the combine I'm about to blow this fucking lid off the place. So I was excited. But going into the combine, it is designed to pressure you.
It is all about you don't have any time to yourself. They give you a schedule, you know, 8 to 10. No, it's fucking 8 to whatever. You're going to be in meetings every night till late as they can. You're going to get up early. They drug test you, you know, 3 or 4 in the morning, and then you go. So that's like the last day. So you're not doing all your testing till the very last day. So you're already there the whole week. And during that week, you're meeting with the coaches. They're putting you up on the board. They're trying to, you know, they're trying to put you under the pressure cooker and see how you react. And all these questions, they already know the answers to. So you go into these meetings and lie. They'll fucking – and they got a camera in your face. So it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, but when you say they drug test you, are you talking about street drugs?
Like yes. I think all at the combine.
Okay.
So – and they tell you it starts at 5, and then they say, well, if you got to piss in the middle of the night, you can go down there. So get up 3 o'clock, and the whole damn room's full. So that's how the week starts. And it's nonstop meetings. You know who you're meeting with. And, I mean, they go – so I remember the first meeting I had was with the Chiefs, and they had the number one overall pick that year. And I go in there, and they have – it's my first start. We're playing Florida State. It's my first start at tackle ever. I'm out there late off the ball getting my fucking ass whooped. And Andy Reid goes, well, Lane, what can you tell us what's going on here? I said, son, looks like I'm getting my damn ass whooped, don't it? And they didn't know how to react, I guess.
Yeah.
So they started laughing. But really, that's what they did. They go in there. They want to put a name to the face, see what your personality's like. I mean, they have these guys just monitoring your body language at every little step you take. And they write these detailed, you know, going back, I've seen like scouting reports almost, and they write it all. If you're cocky, if you're full of shit, and like I said, they've already talked to all the coaches of Oklahoma, and they talked to the people, the janitor, and they want to know how you treat, you know, nothing you can hide. So, but after that, yeah, I mean, going in, I knew I was going to run well. Bench, I was disappointed because my first day of training, I did 30, and on the combine, I did 28. So, but for me, bench press really don't mean a whole lot, I guess, in football. I've seen a lot of guys strong as shit. I think when it comes to football, core strength is one, and balance and body control for what I do. But really, I think for linemen, what they're looking at, they look a lot at the 10-yard split. They want to see explosion out of stance, the broad jump. And really, they want to see how you are on the board, see how much you can retain information. So a lot of football terminology is pretty similar, but it'll be different names. So instead of a T-block for one team, maybe a deuce block. And so they'll put you on the board, and they'll have different names for their system, and then they'll race it real quick and put it back on, draw the defense, and then they have a video of it all. So it's
Yeah. Did they ask you any of those weird questions that you always read about a couple
yeah,
days
they
later?
Yeah, it was the year that Teo was coming out, and they had the whole girlfriend shit, and they asked me if I had a real girlfriend time. I said, I got a real wife, I think. And so that's the only weird question they had.
Were you married at the time?
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got married. So I got married right before the combine, right before the draft. So that's how, yeah. Oh, yeah, it went by fast, buddy.
Well, how old were you?
22.
Yeah. That's early.
Yeah.
Hell, I got married at 25, and I was divorced at 26. So I got that going for
me. Good.
You ever need any help, you just call me. Hey, so you kick ass, you turn a lot of heads, you blow a lot of people away, and then the draft comes, and you go in the first round, number 4 spot. Shit. Man, that's awesome. You got to be proud of that.
Yeah, but it's just, if you could have seen where I was in Oklahoma, they could have told the story better than I could, because I didn't play till my junior year, late, you know, new position. So it all came by fast. So, yeah, and next thing I know, man, I'm in Philly. It's an intimidating town. You go in there and –
But what did you think when you first heard the word Philly? I mean, because you're a Texas dude from East Texas, and you hear Philly. When coming up, were you a fan of any specific pro team?
Yeah, I was a Brett Favre fan, so I was a Green Bay Packer fan.
Okay.
I liked the way he played. I liked his demeanor, country dude. I feel like he was, you know, I just liked his energy that he played with. I going in, I thought for sure it was either going to be Miami or Philly for a meet with them. And then our coach at the time, or right now, Jeff Stoutland, our O-line coach, he was the offensive line coach for Alabama. So I was meeting with him all throughout the draft process, and I was like, I have a feeling these guys are going to take me if Miami doesn't. So the third pick comes up on the board, and they have a camera in front of myself and Deion Jordan, and my agents go, well, it looks like we're going to Miami, and we fucking slap hands, and Deion Jordan, I said, no, we ain't. And we sit back down. Next pick, Philly picks, and, man, they always talk about, what'd you hear on the phone, you know, when you get that call? I didn't hear shit. I couldn't hear who it was. It was loud. I didn't know who I was talking to. Hung up, and, hey, there it was. And so,
going to Philly. Was that just nerve-wracking when you watch him?
Yeah.
It happened fast for you because you went 4.
Yeah, it goes by fast. And just my dad's never been to New York City. So, and I was walking around
I asked him, is that the Empire State Building? He said, yeah, I think so. He said, fuck, what I know. I'm just a dumbass from Romero, Texas.
Yeah.
So it was fun just have my family up there and never had that kind of experience. So it was cool.
It could have turned out bad because, I mean, just like, you know, like Aaron Rodgers, you know, he thought he was going to go with, or everybody thought he was going to go at this certain spot and just kept going on and on and on.
Yeah.
There's a couple of guys that have had that. And some of it was due to, you know, some not good choices.
Yeah.
But sometimes guys just fall. It's like, hey, man, well, where the fuck am I going? Mm-hmm. So you said going to Philly, and you said it's in I love to wrestle in Philly. Philly fans have always been very good to me.
Yeah.
So when you go there and all of a sudden you embrace the – you always talk about, like, football in Philly is a lot like football in Texas.
So it's a religion.
Religion. Yeah. So they take that shit serious. And you said it was intimidating.
Hell
but,
yeah.
Dude, you're coming from OU, which is an intimidating program.
It's intimidating. And then I have Jason Peters, who's left tackle, so I'm supposed to be succeeding him. And, you know, he's one of the best of all time, if not the best. And so I'm supposed to emulate that guy. Yeah, okay, don't fuck up. Don't have a good bad play. Because as soon as you do, all them summits there are going to try to get you off a game, if you pay attention to it. But, I mean, really, I think the toughest year I had was, I mean, really just the rookie year, because you go there because it's 2 years in one. You play your whole college season, and then you have the draft process combine, and you don't really have any time off, and then you're in OTAs, and then it's football time again. So, long 2 years.
To me, you know, playing high school football, it was just a blast, because you're out there. I mean,
were your buddies?
Yeah, I saw some of your tape. Y'all played a lot more scientific game than we did. And you're the QB, and then, you know, you go to junior college. I thought, man, that was even, if not, you know, it was just a sidestep. It was no more pressure to it. When I went to North Texas, now they're Division I. It was Division II back then, but there was more pressure there, and you had to do something, or, you know, they got a lot more money invested in you.
Yeah.
So you go from high school, Kilgore, OU, now pro style. What was the biggest change in pressure with responsibility and athletic talent you are now facing, because that is the elite?
Yeah.
The elite.
Yeah, so I remember, you know, I was a big combine guy, so you know all these guys' numbers you're about to go against. And so sometimes you get too much in your head. I feel like I was in my head a lot, and you know, as a rookie. And really, I hate to say it, but you have to take your ass whoopings and learn from them. And that's really how you grow as a player. So took a lot of those my rookie year. A lot of it's, you know, assignment errors. But, you know, I think that maybe the biggest jump is probably offensive defensive line from the pros to college, because everybody's pretty damn fast in college. You have your speed. When it comes down to savviness and brute strength, and, I mean, this is the best of the best. This isn't, you know, I'm playing Texas 1 week and I have the week off next week against some team. So that's the biggest thing. You have to be consistent every week. And, you know, one thing about these guys, like I said, the intelligence of them, I mean, the stances, shit you get away with in college, you can't do that now. They read on your stances. They read on your eyes. I mean, everything is – it's out there. It's all black and white. And these guys, I mean, all you do is play football, and all these motherfuckers do is watch film and scout you. They know what you're about. So that's one thing I love about football, is that it's all black and white right out there for you. You can't bullshit it. Your effort, everything you do is shown on tape. And so you can talk all the bullshit you want. The tape's going to prevail. And they say the eye in the sky doesn't lie.
There's a thing. Brock Lesnar decided he didn't want to play football. Brock Lesnar decided he didn't want to be in the wrestling business anymore, so he figured he'd go out and try out for the Minnesota Vikings. Okay, Brock Lesnar, I don't know if you've ever met him.
Built like a damn silverback.
Man, that dude is nothing but a grade A-plus genetic freak, and just fast, quick, strong, two-time All-American. Hell, he was UFC heavyweight champ. So anyway, my point is, he didn't play a whole lot of football, you know.
Yeah,
he wrestled. He was a wrestler. So he goes up there and damn near makes a team. But it's a guy like that where you could take this – freak physical specimen of kind of which you are the same, but if the other person is just about as strong or just about as quick, but they have all the technique, the savvy, the learning, and the tricks, you're gonna get taken to school.
Yeah, and there's a lot of players like that. Whatever they may lack athletically, that they can make diagnose a play a lot sooner and get there. You know what I'm saying? So all these scouts, that's what they do. They devote their lives to breaking down these players, but. Yeah, if you can get a player that has good genetics, like I'd say like Luke Kuechly, the guy was so smart and he used to call it every damn play before we ran it, and that's
What did you think when he announced his retirement the past year? Because he was a guy that I really admired.
Yeah,
he had had a few, and I'd seen him lit up on the sidelines that one time. He just had that look of fright on his face. You know, it was one of many that he'd had, and it just scares the shit out of me, because I might have had one or two in my day, but not like that. What did you think when he announced that retirement?
I think you kind of get heartbroken for the guy because you know what that game means to him, and for him to say that he's done with it.
And he's so young.
He's so young, but it means, I mean, these hits take a toll on you.
Yeah.
But I think if he's doing, I think it's the smart decision. You know, Calvin Johnson did some, you know, guys retiring early, Patrick Willis. Hats off to them, man, because, hey, after it's all over, you know, hey, shit goes on.
I thought I kind of got a bug up my ass when Andrew Luck announced his retirement. He started crawling all over him. I'm like, hey, man. That dude's ankle.
They don't know.
Yeah.
His arm. Yeah.
Here's a guy. I mean, he loves the game. He's obviously a super smart cat. He's really good at it. And he decides to step back just because he wants to not have a shit pile of pain or whatever deal with everything he's dealing with. I respected his decision.
Everybody gets to the point where they've had enough. And he's been a guy that's obviously the franchise guy can do it. But he's always rehabbing. You know, he goes out there, gets rehab, does well, gets injured again over and over, man. That does a lot to you. Fucks you up.
Hey, man, now that we know so much more about, not we, about the concussion, CTE, concussion protocol. Like I said, I've had one or two, but it was never a thing for me. It was just me getting dropped on my head and damn near getting paralyzed, which was my, deciding to ride off into the sunset. You had a concussion this past season. Mm-hmm. There's 5 steps to a concussion protocol. Take me through the concussion protocol if something like that and it did happen to you. What do they do? How does it all work?
Well, they take you to the sideline. They put you through some different standard testing. And the thing that they changed about it is that now they have it's like a pre-concussion test. So you take a test out of season and you have a baseline score for all these different factors, reaction time, memory, recall. And so they have that baseline. And throughout the process, I mean, obviously – if you're concussed, you stay out the game. And throughout that, you have to – first of all, it's symptom management. You have a score. And then a lot of it, to get cleared, you have to go see a neurologist, and you have to beat that baseline test, which isn't – it's not a bullshit test. You actually – I think they're doing pretty well with it compared to what it was, I think, a long time ago.
What's the baseline test? They're asking you questions?
Yeah. So it's a computer test. So it's different. Like, I don't know. What's the best way to do
it? Is it response time?
Yes.
It?
Yeah. So it measures your response time. A lot of it's memory recall. So they'll have like 9 different shapes with numbers under them. And you'll have to remember what the shape is, related to the number. So what is arithmetic? Is that what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
So a lot of that.
Speaking of arithmetic, how did you do on – it takes me back to the combine. One of the questions I wanted to ask you, did you have to take the Wunderlich test?
Yes.
Did you? What was your score?
I think I scored a 28 there or a 30, one of those.
Damn near genius.
Oh.
That's smart. I mean, that's a high Wunderlich score. I don't want to call you a genius, but obviously it's a very high score.
Yeah, I ain't that.
There's quarterbacks that don't score that.
Yeah. I mean, it's – so
what's the highest you could score?
50.
Shit, I think I might hit – I don't even know if I'd hit double digits on
that. It don't matter. I don't think it correlates.
It worked out okay for me. Hey, you were in when you were at OU, you were there for human relations was your major.
HR.
What were we going
to
do with that?
I was in health and exercise science, and that's what I wanted to do. And then they had a class called anatomy there that was really fucking serious. This professor was really tough. My class was going to block those fucking 9 techniques because I knew where I wanted to go. But, yeah, it's
anatomy class had you?
Well, it's one of those
sticking point for you.
Yeah, all these guys weren't passing. I mean, this teacher didn't bullshit around, and it was. I mean, you had to do your homework, and for what I was doing, man, you don't have a whole lot of time. I mean, for what my goals were, I still have 3 hours left to graduate. So there's that.
Man, I left with 17. 3's really close. When I dropped out, I would have been the first of my family to graduate from a 4-year degree, and it broke my parents' heart.
Yeah.
But hell, I was going to go into insurance business. I thought I had to, be a business major. My dad sold insurance for 11, and he graduated from Rice University, and he played football. They went to the 58 Cotton Bowl. This is back when Rice was actually a program in the Southwest Conference, and scored the only touchdown in a 21-7 loss against Navy. So I figure I'm going to go into insurance business with him, and algebra, too, and accounting are kicking my fucking ass. So I just said, hey, fuck it. I'll turn into a PE major. And anatomy, physiology, kinesiology all work for me because I was interested in, and I could see how everything worked. Yeah. So I did okay. But when you did those labs and you had to start naming those parts in the brain, that's when I started getting real close to that smart dude that was in the class. And I started copying him on his tests. Yeah. And so I got through anatomy.
Yeah.
Where there's a will, there's a way.
By God.
So are you going to go back and get your degree?
You know, mom would like me to, but I think my class I got to take is pre-cal, so I guess we'll see. We'll see about that.
Shit. I think, here's one of the things I've noticed about you. I know you give back to the community. You do a lot of stuff with the schools there in the Philadelphia area. Mm. Also, the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia.
Chop.
Mm-hmm. And so I always tell everybody, I did not get a college degree. But if any kid ever asks me any opinion of mine, I say, hey, man, to go out in the world armed with as much information.
Armed
with as much information and give you your best chances at survival and succeeding. So I always preach, go as far as you can, as far as whether it's trade school, learning how to weld, or spending yourself up on schoolwork.
Just getting educated, and it's about forming relationships, I think, along the way, to what it's all about.
And, I mean, with what you're doing right now, dude, I mean, you could tell me different, but, I mean, with all the stuff that you guys do with film study, learning, plays, all the playbook, man, we talked about the JUCO guys, some guys that just ain't quite there.
Yeah.
I think to really be successful, you have to be such a supreme physical specimen that you can just out-dominate everybody or have a knack for the game. Mm-hmm. Are you damn sure at that level? You got to be pretty fucking intelligent.
Yeah, you'd be surprised. There's a lot of dumbasses walking around. Hey, sometimes
but they're genetic freaks.
Hey, yeah, exactly. I would say along the offensive line for what we do, a lot of it's you have all these different schemes, you have all these different calls, and you have to be on your shit at the right moment. So a lot of it's just like it's competing under pressure. But that's what I love about the game is that I'm relying to that guy next to me and a lot of. What I do as far as blocking defensive line is, a lot of chess. Because sometimes they may run a game. Sometimes they, set up a different presentation. But it's all fun.
Yeah, but I'm watching you on YouTube. You're talking with Coach Brian Bellick and then Ron Jaworski. I used to love Jaworski. And you're breaking down. You're telling them what's going on here. So when I'm watching you, I'm not watching a dummy diagnose his plays. I'm watching a guy who knows what's up.
Yeah, I mean, we have that phrase, I don't fear the man who practices 10,000 kicks or – one kick, that's 10,000 kicks once, or I fear the man that practices one kick 10,000 times. So that's all I do, man. That's all we do is play football. So after a while, you get pretty decent at it.
Talking about that, just as far as Jason Peters' influence on you and how he was so open and sharing with you, and you guys just all put him over just like it's a supreme stud.
I'll tell you, yeah, he is.
So
I'll tell you a story. So, yeah, my first story at training camp, I'm coming in. They want me at 315, all this. I'm struggling my weight. And this summit gets done working out, and he's in his cold tub shorts. He gets on that scale and says 360, and he ain't fat, buddy. And then so you see a guy that big, and you're thinking, there's no way this guy can move. And I'm just like, this guy can fucking move as fast or maybe faster than me. And so he's undrafted, and he goes to the Bills, and they have him as a tight end at 330 pounds, and they have him as a wedge buster. And our special teams coach, Dave Phipp, he's like, he's the only son of a bitch I've seen that bust a four-man wedge. I said, hey, I fucking believe it. The guy can barely fit through that door, but he's a down to earth country guy. He's from Queen City up there by Texarkana, Arkansas. Just having him, just kind of like a big brother. What I like about him is that with football, people can teach you all this. There's only a certain amount of shit you can take with you before a play snap. So he likes to keep things pretty simple. And one thing he told me is that, 9 times out of 10, if you have a good presentation to the defensive end, which is if you have a good low base and fast feet, you're going to win most of the time. If you get out there and you're late off the ball, simple stuff, but not a good thing.
When did you develop that kick step that you have that gets you so far back or wide or so that incoming defensive end or what?
Yeah, it was through JP. I go in. I mean, the guys, what's funny is that he's not even looking like seems periff. He has his head like this, and he can still periff that ball. But I notice he's always beating the snap count. And so when you talk about a defensive end, a lot of times their lives, if they get that first step, that's a sack. You get that tackle, shoulders turn, it's over. That guy's beating the DN off the ball every time. He may get some false starts every now and then, which I get a lot of them too. But it's the name of the game. It's all about if you explode to the spot that you're going to meet the defensive end at, you have a lot more time to react. You have a lot more time to build your foundation, so to speak, and get ready to whatever that DN is going to do to you.
Are you a guy that talks trash during the game? Because I'm a huge fan of Lawrence Taylor. In my opinion, he's the greatest linebacker to play the game. And so I'm that guy. And, man, that dude, of course, and I was a kid watching him. And we're going way back. But, man, that dude just was nothing but straight-up chaos. He would hand you your ass and then tell you about it. And he was always teeing off on Jaworski.
Yeah.
So anyway, are you a guy that talks trash out there, or is a guy that, or does it affect you if someone's talking trash to you? Or I mean,
yeah,
you're a humble guy.
I usually don't talk shit unless somebody smarts off. If they get, I'm not going to. Somebody's going to smart to me. I'm going to fucking get at them, and then here we go the rest of the game. So, but yeah, I mean, every now and then shit happens out there. You can't, you know, guys coming to bull rush the fuck out of you. They say something to you. Hey, I'm going to say something back to you.
You are noted as being a very, very outspoken guy, and a pastor. It's always seems to be the wide receivers or this, that, or whatever. And most of the time, it's not the offensive lineman. So, but you are that guy, and so you.
Man, a lot of times I get myself in trouble. But fuck, I'm just coming off the hip with it. Sometimes it's kind of genuinely how I feel. I try not to backtrack too much because usually it's genuinely how I feel. And I think my approach can be different sometimes.
But were you always like that? Or because my question is, I know you're a big Conor McGregor fan,
mm-hmm.
and you kind of study his game a little bit. And that guy talks a lot of trash, but I think, and I may be paraphrasing you, but, you know, and putting yourself out there, it forces you to back at you
yeah,
up.
Yeah, well, I think if you talk that shit and then they think, oh, he's bullshit, and then you go out there and they see it's not a fucking joke, fuck, that's hard to deal with.
Right.
And, hey, you got to pick and choose your battles in this league. You're not just going to fucking King Kong your way, everybody. Every dog has his day. But I don't know. What I liked about him, I think what really stood out was that Aldo fight. He's going against Aldo, who's 10 years undefeated, and he's never been talked to like that. And so a guy's never been talked to like that gets talked to like that, and he's going, what the fuck is going on? And then he gets in the ring and sees that it's not bullshit. And what's cooler than that?
I think I thought he got in his head.
Yeah.
I thought he got in his head.
Yeah.
Dude, you see the last fight against Cowboy Cerrone when you hit him with those left shoulders?
Yeah, he was, wow.
I couldn't believe
it. I've never seen that.
I never either.
Yeah, I didn't know you could do that. Well, hey, you could.
Yeah, and effectively, and like Cerrone's a badass.
Yeah, Cerrone is bad son of a bitch.
What do you like to watch on TV? I mean, I know you're a big movie guy, but do you follow the sport? Because don't you train with some UFC guys?
Yeah, so that's where I met him. He was actually at Unbreakable at Jay Glazer's gym.
Where's Jay Glazer's gym at? Because I know he's
Pink Taco there in West Hollywood.
Okay.
Pink Taco. So that's where I met him at. So I went out there just to try it out. You know, I watched UFC, but I wanted to get out there. I think it was Clay Matthews was grappling or doing some MMA training with Jay. I was like, man, I want to go try this. So I went out there, man, and first couple days, man, I was getting fucking ragdolled. You want to talk about cardio? There's nothing more tiring than wrestling. You know, fuck, you did your whole life. Wrestling the son of a bitch in the ring series for, you know, 3-5 minutes on end, wears your ass out. So I just remember the first couple of days, I was just puking my ass off. And the guys that I'm going against aren't bigger than me, but they're just wearing my ass out. And so I think it was a humbling experience for me. And then just seeing how those fighters train and how they have all these different coaches and what their schedule's like. And I'm like, I think football's tough. And I'm seeing these guys, what they do, it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable what they go through.
So are you still doing that?
Well, I did that one summer. Now I just talk about what I used to do.
But did it help you in any way, shape, or form?
I think with getting leverage, like the pummeling, getting your guard, I think it, you know, if you train low, I think it's going to help you out with football. But a lot of it was just, I guess, the mindset, just being around those guys. That's what I wanted to see because, you know, football is a team sport, but I have a lot of one-on-one battles. And so it's really the way I see it, you know, I'm one-on-one against the defensive end. So I like being around great competitors, see what makes them tick. And, you know, a lot of times you can learn a lot just being around people like that, successful and just enlightening. It was cool to be around those type of people.
Hey, one of the things I was very interested in, let's talk about your thoughts on the Super Bowl that just happened with Kansas City and San Fran.
I watched the first quarter. I was on the road driving.
Were you?
Yeah.
Did you listen to the game? Or did you get a chance to watch a replay?
Yeah, I mean, I was on my phone to see the score. I have my coach in college, Bruce Kittle, his son's George Kittle. So I wanted it for him. But then again, Winchester was my good friend at OU, a couple guys at OU, Williams, the running back. So mm-hmm. I didn't mind who won, but it felt good to see James win.
But you didn't see the game?
No.
Okay, there goes that question. Because I was going to ask you about, you know, well, I don't mention names, but some people say, hey, this is why this team won or this why that team won. And I the way I took it was San Fran won all the games that they won as a team. They lost the ones they lost as a team, and so they lost that one as a team. I just didn't think there should have been any player or coach pointing. And Kansas City.
Well, hey, there's got to be something to talk about. That's what they do.
Well, I know. But I know. But, hey, man, I didn't think it was a coach that blew the game. I think,
no.
Like you guys always say, and it's almost an automatic response or cliche, you know, we didn't make enough plays.
Fucking obviously.
That's the bottom line.
That's all you can say, man.
What are you going to say?
What can you say?
Yeah. Man, one time when Baltimore went, the dude fell down on that long sideline route. I mean, that was on that guy just because he fell down and there wasn't nobody there.
Yeah.
But that's a long time ago and I can't remember the rest of the damn play. I want to know about sometimes what happens because it's been a long time since I played college football. I never played at the level you did, at the level you're playing at now, which is the elite level. So you guys going to halftime, let's just say you're kind of getting your ass handed to you. Halftime adjustments. Mm-hmm. How do they break that locker room down? And what are you guys talking about? Is it Doug in there, Coach Peterson, in there laying the smack down first? Or are you going to your offensive line coach or offense coordinator and trying to – you tell me what the process
is. Yeah, so you
– I always wanted to do because that's what I'm looking for come a third quarter.
Yeah, so you go in the locker room. You have defensive side. They have their projector set up with all their chairs. All defensive guys sit over there. Usually defense coordinator. Usually the coaches are meeting for a little bit, so you get in there and you have your bananas, you have your fucking Excel gels, you know,
get carbon,
energy up, Gatorade, and then you have about 5 minutes for the coaches in there. Offense coordinator with us, Doug and Stoutland O line, and we'll just we don't have video, but we have clips of the game, some shit that they may have done or surprise us with, and so we'll say, hey, well, we're going to change this on this protection, so. We'll make an adjustment in there, and then we'll have a game plan. Okay, we're going to keep pounding the inside zone because it's been working. Eventually, going to break. So it's really huddled together. You got your little projector, and then it's the halftimes aren't very long, so it's not long for you back out there on the field. So get some fluids in you, get a couple bananas in you, get the game plan, and here we go. It's back out there playing again.
What was the most motivating halftime speech that you got? Someone having to light a fire in your ass, whether it was college, JUCO, or pro level, because I've got one for you. I'll go first.
Yeah,
we was there's mixed company in the room, so this story was some profanity in it, but this was one of our halftime speeches, and so I was playing linebacker. We was down there getting our ass handed to us on Saturday night. It was in winter. It was cold and rainy, and we was freezing our ass off, and on top of that, they was kicking the shit out of us. So we go in there, and, of course, we're in the away dressing room, which is about as big as this room, so it's a whole team. And then Tom Adams, he was a defensive line guy. He played at Rice University, and he was the last guy that the Oakland Raiders cut way back in the day. So, I mean – and dude was about 6'1", but he was about 320, and he was intense, and he wore braces, on his teeth. So he was scary. He was cool as fuck, but, man, when he started lighting up on you, you listen.
Yeah.
And so, man, he started ripping us a new one because they was running roughshod on us. Man, we was ragtag. I mean, it was JUCO football, man. Our red and white uniforms, and he goes, God damn it. He goes, you guys, tomorrow you're going to wake up with a butt full of cum. I'm like,
God damn.
I'm sitting over there like, I got my arm hanging off over here, damn near beat to shreds. I said, you're going to pile that one on me because we're getting fucked that bad. You're going to drop that dime in the form of motivation. I'm like, motherfucker, what am I doing here? How come I'm not at the University of Texas? Has there ever been that moment for you?
I've had some halftime speeches.
That's a top race. Can you top that? I apologize to everybody in this room, but that's what the guy told us.
We've had some,
and we lost the game.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of. Man, I remember as our in high school, we ended up playing alto. And they ended up winning state. They beat the fuck out of us for junior. 50-7 is what the game was. But at the end of the game, he tells one of our buddies to break it down. Lord's Prayer.
Yeah.
He starts off, damn, I hate these alto yellow jackets. And coach says, wait. He starts praying. And then, it was one of those things. It's like in Friday Night Lights when Dallas Carter was beating the fuck out of that team so bad. Yeah. You got nothing to say. That's where we were. There wasn't shit to say except, holy fuck. You can't say nothing to that.
Hey, when I used to get ready to go in the ring, are you standing up because we're on time limit?
No.
Okay, before I go to the ring, I'll take that back. Hey, I was wondering about your pregame rituals, if you had any, because back when I used to lace them up and go to the ring, I always put my right sock and my other sock on, and then my right boot, lace it up, and then put the left boot on. And then when I started taping my wrist, I'd always start with my left wrist because I'm right-handed. And if I didn't put my right boot on and lace it up, I mean, everything was going to fucking just shit the bed. So,
superstitious.
Are you a superstitious person? Do you have any rituals? What's the story? On
my ritual is I used to put on my socks, my right one first, my left one, and then I got fucking fined because my socks kept sliding down below my knees, so it kept finding me. So now I wear some Under Armour long sleeve, my socks are over top of it, so I make sure I got that. But another thing we started doing is that, you know, usually before the game, your mind's fucking racing. So what I want to do is calm down. I want to be over emotional. And one thing he did is they had these concentration grids. Sounds so stupid, but it's a grid with 0 to 100. All the numbers are scattered up, and you have a time limit. You try to focus, you know, find 0-0, then 0-1, all the way up to 100. So it keeps you in the moment. It keeps you concentrating, and you really compete with yourself. But what I find it does, it calms my mind, so I'm not overthinking. Generally in football, a lot of times you fuck up, you're overthinking. Paralysis by analysis, you're scared. You're scared of getting beat. I just try to fucking put it all aside and really, I try to calm down as much as I can.
Okay, because
I get amped up. Usually on game day, I get up. Usually 5:30, I'm on edge. Usually I go in the shower, dry heave a little bit, just get that nervous energy out, and I'm ready to go.
So, are you eating pregame, or are you one of those guys don't like to eat?
No, I eat. Okay. I force feed. I don't ever puke like before the actual game. Just when I wake up in the morning. So that's how I've always been since college.
A lot of times I see them guys out there, you know, UFC guys walking to the octagon with a set of headphones on. I figure that's an endorsement. I've seen the guys come off the bus, got the headphones on. I've seen you with them on. Okay, now is that an endorsement, or are you listening to some tunes?
Listen to some tunes.
Okay, so what are you listening to?
Man, we have a lot of – I mean, generally in my locker room, it's a lot of rap being played. So I'm not playing Blue Clear Sky by George Strait. We're playing some sinister shit. I like to listen to some grunge, some Alice in Chains. I like to listen to Soundgarden, Nirvana, some rap mix in there. But usually, like what I was saying, what I found out is if I ever get too emotional or something before a game, it doesn't do good for me. So the less I think – and the more I stay in the moment, the better I am. I don't care about what fucking song's being played. Doesn't need to be played right before I walk there, because I start overthinking and start second guessing, doubting yourself. And, you know, that's really just out of fear of being beat when it comes down to. And everybody has that. So it's natural.
I think, but sometimes, man, I wasn't a headphone guy back in the day, and it wasn't a thing back then. But to me, if I was listening to some of the shit that I listen to, if it ain't country, it's on the heavy side, and that's going to make me too high.
Yeah.
And I don't want to get too high. I need to think, you just said.
Yeah. Hey, it's a fine line. You want to have that energy and that rage, but at the same time, you want to be composed. And it's a fine line. You got to stay in between.
Hey, when you're inside the huddle, let's just say the game's going like you want it to go, and everything's running fine and dandy inside the huddle. Carson starting quarterback, but you say he's in there.
Yep.
And all the regulars are in there. What's the status of that? What's the status of that huddle? Is he the only one speaking?
Yes.
Okay.
So it's either usually him or Kelsey. Kelsey, will, you know, he does a lot of times going to the line. He'll say, because, you know, everything.
And Jason is the center.
Yeah. And we'll ask, well, what's the snap count? That's generally what the fuck I'm answering most times you ever see me talking. But, yeah, usually, you know, the offensive line, you have the backs and receivers, and Carson's at the other end. Usually, you know, we lean in there, see what the play is. A lot of times you'll get the play. You may have an RPO, so it may be a run-pass option. And then, so you'll have that. You may have a different snap count. So that's really what I'm paying attention to. Snap count's really big for me. And then when I get to the line, I'm listening to what Kelsey's saying. And if I have a call with Brooks, then we'll communicate. If I have a call with a tight end, then we'll communicate. And then it gets very difficult in away games. I mean, a lot of times you can't really hear a whole lot. So it's really, I'm coming face-to-face like this, hearing the play. So.
Okay, take me back inside that same locker room. Yes. Y'all are getting y'all's ass handed to you. Nothing's going the way it's supposed to be. Maybe you're on the road, or maybe you're playing in Philly, and it's even worse.
Yes.
Because you're losing. Back inside the huddle. What's up?
I mean, our coach always says, focus for 4 seconds at a time. If you can do that, because you think of football as a 60-minute, you know, game. It's not. It's really, you know, 5 minutes of actual playing, 7 minutes actual playing if you count the, you know, seconds of the play. So, He tells you to just focus inside those 4 seconds. And really, there's a book called Relentless by Tim S. Grover. He used to be Michael Jordan's trainer. But he always, you know, he always talked about guys overthinking. And the key to it is if you can calm your mind and under the most tense moments and think clearly, that's when you'll get whatever you want done.
Are you a big reader or are you an audiobooks guy?
Like audiobooks. He knows I'm a big YouTube guy, man. I love watching different podcasts, different, you know, clips, whatever interests me. A lot of it's fighters, so I just love hearing people talk shit. I love the press conferences. I love that shit. I mean, it's a lot of fun to me.
Hey, when you guys won the Super Bowl, was that 2017? Mm-hmm. Time escapes me. They always talk about how big the Super Bowl is, and I'm a football junkie, so. Yeah. How was the experience for you? I mean, I know you got family that you're trying to get tickets for, spend time with, but I know you got your meetings, you got your media. But when you get out there on the field, like, are you nervous as a long tail cat in a room full of rocket chair? It wasn't magnified?
No, it was such a long fucking season. After you're at the end, you're like, come on, motherfucker, I'm ready for it. Just, hey, whatever, let's go. I don't want to think about it no more. Because that season's so long, man. Right. You're talking about from, you know, June to fucking February. It's a long time, and you're doing football every day. So you get to that point. Super Bowl, I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on, but what the coaches did a good job is try to keep it as normal a schedule as possible. So try to, you know, they always talk about eliminate distractions. So, you know, he told, you know, handle the ticket situation early, so you ain't got to do that bullshit when you get there. So kind of, that's really what it was. So, I mean, we practiced at the Minnesota facility. It was, you know, about 2 foot of snow outside. There wasn't a whole lot you could do. So we practiced, man, and then we did different events as a team. We would go out to eat and, try to keep it normal week, but yeah, I mean, before the game, I remember it was a lot of guys were just loose because you had that feeling of what we could do. And I guess when you feel that, it's kind of when you know that you have a special team.
If you guys going out to dinner, is it just O-line? Because, I mean, that's a bunch of some bitches out there at the dinner table.
Yeah, usually we do O-line dinners. When I was out there, I think I went out with Alshon and Tori and some other guys. So, yeah, that was just an interesting week.
Finally, you know, y'all get the big win, okay? Mm-hmm. Now trying to chase another one. Can y'all get back there?
Yeah, we can get back there. I think when you look at our past two seasons, we've had everybody fucking out that you can have out. I'm talking about star players. And you can make all excuses you want. Did we accomplish what we want? No. But I can say if I think if similar teams went through the same process of losing everybody, and I think a lot of teams would have folded. So I think we're resilient in that standpoint. I think we're hungry. I think, you know, in Philly – as a player, you put up a lot of bullshit. You put up a lot of, you know, a lot of scrutiny. But hey, it is what it is. You're getting paid lots of dollars. Hey, it is what it is. Yeah, it's just part of it.
Why was the left tackle always the glamour tackle position because of protecting
blindside
the blindside of the quarterback? It's because now right tackle is really a thing now.
Yeah, it's you know, I think. As these rushers started, you know, the J.J. Watts, these different guys, the Khalil Max, the Von Millers, as these guys starting to become more prominent, these guys are all over the right tackles. And so I think it was the Super Bowl with Carolina and the Broncos. Von Miller's having a field day, man. And it's just – it's really in this league, coaches say, man, you can only hide for so long until, you know, somebody comes – I mean, and the way it is now, what a lot of teams are doing is they're building a jam on the fly. So you're lining up a guy mano a mano. So somebody's eventually going to get their ass whipped. And they find a leak in that – and the crack and the crevice, they're going to keep exposing it. So, yeah, I mean, when you go look across the board, man, it's just the tackle position in general, it's really changed the dynamic. So left, right, I mean, everybody gets humbled out there.
Okay, now, when you left Oklahoma, you was playing on the left side. You go to Philly, of course, you get Jason Peters from running left side. Yep. So you go to right side.
Yeah, so the plan was to play right until JP retired. Hey, man, he's a dinosaur.
Stud dinosaur.
Prehistoric.
Yeah.
So
okay – if or when he retires, will they?
I think I'm staying right.
Right.
And a lot of that, even when he would get hurt, they'd keep him right just because instead of changing two positions up, just change one guy up. So we've done that multiple times. I've had played some left tackle before earlier in my career, but really, man, it's just, hey, whatever job I got to do, you're going to do it. And that's it.
Hey, a couple of random questions as we wrap this thing up. You're out here in L.A. Where are you off to next?
We're going to the Tyson Fury fight. It's our first big
time. Hey, where is that fight?
I think it's in Las Vegas, if I'm not mistaken.
I'll be damned. And is that this coming Sunday? Or
yep.
Who you got?
Her. 22nd. It is Sunday, isn't it? Saturday? Saturday.
Who you got?
I want Fury to win just because, I mean, I follow him, but when you look at it, it's going to be it's damn entertaining. Both of them are pretty good personalities. When I see a better boxer with Fury, you know, the way he moves and the way he's awkward and avoids those big punches, I think he's more technical. I think he's more polished. But you have that guy who's erased 41 guys out of 43. You stay stationary for too long in one spot. So I think that's why he's always moving and kind of creating those different angles so he can't get a good, powerful shot. Because as you've seen the previous guys that walk straight for him, they get fucking like a Tennessee fainting goat out there.
Hey, I saw on your Instagram account you was hanging out with John Meadows. John used to work on some nutrition for me and some training routines. What did he teach you? Dude, he's intense. He's smart.
He's really intense. So, yeah, I mean, this guy brought him there one day, and we went and worked out. And just, you know, even that bodybuilding side, you don't realize what those guys do to their body and how disciplined it is and how regimented they are with their, you know, their food, their macros, and their micro. You know, it's all scheduled. And really, man, he just really kicked my ass, to be honest with you. You don't, you know, those guys are the hypertrophy phase. They're doing lots of sets, lots of reps, and it's pretty intense. And they're all about time under tension and creating a big pump. But, just really just about meeting these guys, branching out. I think, you know, with competitors, and I see guys like the UFC, those guys that go through so much, and I see the bodybuilding realm and how they work out and how they train. I just thought it was pretty cool be around those type of guys.
Your personal vehicle, are you driving a truck or a car or SUV?
I got a Honda Civic I drive around.
You're lying.
I'm a lying son of a bitch.
Hey, man, back when I was in Atlanta, hey, you're tall, but I had a Honda CRX, and that's somebody's got about 50 miles a gallon. Kevin Nash is 6'11 ass riding shotgun with me. There's a lot of room in those little motherfuckers.
Yeah, so I was in a Honda Civic before, so I moved downtown. I was at the Ritz at the time. I'm not a Ritz guy, if you look at me. But I fucking pulled up there in that Honda Civic, and they looked at me like I was fucking Joe Dirt walking out there. But I drive a Raptor now, and I got a Carson Wentz sticker on the back of it.
Hey, man, how you like that thing? Because I was thinking about getting one, but that BlueTEC, EcoTEC, whatever the hell it is, turbocharged motor, I was like, I don't know about a 6 and a Raptor. But
yeah,
I
think they have V8s now.
I know they're going to a V8 in 2020.
Yeah, so yeah. That's what I want to get. So, yeah. I mean, it still does a job. Hey, it can still get you a ticket
want to. I drove a Roush Supercharged 154 while, I mean, it was just for like 3 days, but it had like 650 horsepower, 610 on the torque, and I was lighting up these damn freeways.
Yeah.
I
like them because they're wide, and it feels like you can really grip that ground. It feels
well. See, this is regular F-150 just with the Fox 2.0s on it, and the reason I was concerned about doing the Raptor here in L.A. with that extra width, now you can't park, dude.
Nowhere.
That's why they drive a pickup truck.
Yeah.
You know, like, you go to underground parking and fuck a Lyft kit because you got one. You ain't parking nowhere.
Yeah, it's how it is in Philly. Every time I go down there, I got to get an Uber. You're not going downtown with it.
I'm the same.
Yeah.
So you dig the Raptor.
Yeah, I was in a Mega Cab before that. That makes you feel better.
Dodge? Yeah, Dodge got the Mega Cab. Hey, man, I seen on your Instagram account you guys doing some commercials for Lincoln Financial Game Plan commercials. You and some of your teammates. Do they have someone that helps you guys with your financial planning? Because, you know.
Yeah, so as you get in the league, as a rookie, you have all these classes. So they have these financial advisors. You have your team go in there. It's player personnel, and they educate you in all this, and they give you guys that have done it the wrong way, done it the right way, and the retirement's really good. You know, in the NFL, they match it per year. So they do a really good job of – and that's changed, I think, over the past decade or so, where kids are a lot more educated. And they show you the guys that done it wrong and where it can lead, and then they show you guys that have planned it out and are doing really well. So I think the education's there, and it's in a good place.
Man, I mean, because I think it's so important, man. When you come from – hell, I came from nothing. You come from Groveton. I don't think y'all were just shitting money. All of a sudden, you know, it's easy. If Mike Tyson can generate $500 million fighting and pretty much run through it, anybody can run through anything, and we've seen it happen.
I've been so used to living not, you know – if I got something to eat and I'm good.
Same here. I mean, I still know the value of a dollar.
Yeah.
I mean, I can make a nickel squeal.
Yeah.
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 Hell, when I first met my wife, we go down to the grocery store, she busted out coupons. And I was like, man, and then this kind of like, you know, I was still kind of like in stone cold mode. I was like, oh, man. Now when she busts them out, man, I got my chest stuck out. I'm proud as a peacock.
We
got our fucking coupons.
Yeah, we got them here. Y'all going to fucking wait in line until they count them all, too.
Y'all see, we're going through our taxes next door. So, it's all about the old veterans used to always tell us, God damn it, kid, it ain't what you make, it's what you save. We used to always tell him, because back then you're making $15, $20 a night. Hey, fuck, you got to make some money to save it.
Yeah.
But, hey, yeah.
Back then you're living for the minute. Hey, yeah. As long as you got to ride.
But a lot of guys, they want to spend on the gross. And all of a sudden, they don't count for Uncle Sam, or they don't count for the state.
It counts for them, though. Hey, it gets counted up eventually.
All of a sudden, one of my final questions, I was watching an old clip. You were playing with Darren Sproles. Darren Sproles, one of my favorite players of all time, just because I just love the way he played the game, whether it's returning, running back, scat back, catching balls out of backfield. How was he to play with? Because I think the guy's the best. Same guy.
Yeah, just how you view him is how everybody else views him.
Yeah.
I don't know what year it was, but, I mean, ever since I've been there, he's been the guy. It doesn't matter if it's a walkthrough. It doesn't matter if it's practice. He is full fucking speed all the time. He's not very big. What's funny, man, you got some big-ass dudes online, and you got Sproles over there looking at everybody like this.
Yeah.
I love watching him compete. I love how he ran, just how dynamic he was. Just going to miss him in the locker room, though. I mean, he's a guy that really, shit, I mean, he's done it all, and he's done everything the right way. And
how long has he been in the league? 14, 15 years?
Yep,
it's been a long time, because I've been watching him a long time, from Charger days on to everywhere he's been. I just think the guy's wonderful.
He is.
Hey, I have a note here on that Lincoln Financial Game Plan commercial that you showed great range as an actor. Is there acting in your future? I was kidding about the great range.
Yeah,
I'm fucking with you.
Hey, I'm glad you did. You got me going. Hey, I thought about coming off that tightrope before, son. I've talked to old Jim Ross about this.
Hey, you know what? As a matter of fact, I was talking to our mutual good friend Jim Ross. This is years ago. You just come into Oklahoma. They turned you into a tackle. And I was talking to him on the phone. He goes, God damn. He goes, every year, you know, it's always our same conversation. It's football season. He goes, shit, Steve, our offensive line is it's going to be a motherfucker this year. He goes, we got this one guy, Lane Johnson. He is nasty. He is mean. So he really had high praise for you.
Yeah, he was there. It was always him and Toby Keith at the games. Funny story. So I remember it was my last game. We're playing A&M. Fucking Johnny Manziel's at the coin toss, and he goes, Manziel's going to run all over y'all motherfuckers today. I said, no. You said, you think so? Hey, he damn sure did for about 300 yards. Hey, beat us like 41-13 last college game. But
hey,
good time.
I said it was going to be the last question. Before we ask you to plug anything you want to plug, the XFL is in action because the NFL is on a reset before we start the next season off. Have you been able to catch any of the XFL action, and what are your thoughts?
When I saw them start interviewing motherfuckers after an interception or this and that, I was like, "This is hey, I'm in, I'm sold." Because I could imagine what it'd be like if they did that to us, what we would say. So I think from a fan's perspective, you kind of get more in depth with that. The rules have changed, and at the end of the day, man, football is football. People love, and you have a lot of these guys are ex NFL players or battling, and so I think I love watching it.
And a lot of guys trying to get a look get another look to get back in the league.
And Canada's like development league, and now you have this. They need this.
There was one guy. I mean, I haven't seen every game. I've watched some of them in a DVR. But Cardell Jones has been getting off.
Yeah, from Ohio State.
Ohio State.
Yeah.
You know, and he was the guy back in the day. I mean, they've had so many guys come through there.
Yeah.
But he was that big, tall, statuesque guy that's going to throw the football.
Hey, I love it. It's especially when there ain't shit on.
I mean,
something fun to watch.
Last question. I know a lot of you guys in the pro wrestling. I bought this Bruiser Brody DVD over. A guy just sent this to me in the mail the other day. You remind me a lot about Bruiser Brody. Just same type, you know, just big-ass, raw-boned dude with good genetics. And he was just like a powerhouse in the ring. Did you ever get a chance? He passed probably way before you got a chance
to
watch him. I'm going to send this to you when I get through with it because this is a guy, if you dig the business or anything like that, you would appreciate the way this guy operated.
Went about it.
He was independent his entire life. I mean, he'd go over to Japan and stay for long tours. And then when he came back to the state, you know, he would make towns for Bill Watts and Tulsa with Mid-South Power Pro, or he'd go to Atlanta, or he'd go to WWF. You know, and he was that guy that never would sign with anybody. And, dude, you know, he could be a nice guy, and he was a nice guy, but if he wanted to eat you up, mister, it was going to be a long night in the office.
Yeah.
So I'm going to send you this when I get done with it. Do you still follow the product at all?
I mean, it's been a little bit. It's just, I mean, with what I do now, I really don't follow a whole lot. It's just,
But Eric Fisher, who was drafted, what, right before you in the 13
first.
Draft? First.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because then it was number two.
Jokel.
Yeah, from A&M.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, there he is in the playoffs, and there's end zone celebration. He grabs two beers and pours them on his helmet, and the league fines him 14 Gs.
Hey, good.
And I shit a brick.
He's a legend, son.
God dang.
Yeah, you can't do that.
You kidding me? He didn't guzzle them. He just poured them on his head.
Yeah.
Do you think that was fine was warranted? Or is my answer not going to get you in trouble with the league?
Probably will. I mean, a lot of shit does. So, but obviously, do I enjoy it? Do the fans enjoy it? Yes. Does the NFL want that alcoholic or alcohol image presentation?
Then don't sell it at the goddamn games.
Well, tell them that.
I'm kidding. I thought it was funny as hell.
I enjoyed it.
I'm making light of it. I'm an NFL junkie, and I love the game.
We had Selleck, when we played Tampa Bay, he did the Captain Morgan celebration and got sponsored by him, but he got his ass fined for it. He put that foot up on that chest.
I love the NFL, so I'm just kidding about that. I don't want to put you any hot water on my show. What do you got upcoming? Plug your Instagram account. I know you're Lane Johnson 65 on Instagram, but talk about where people can find you or anything that you'd like to talk about before we wrap this thing up.
I'm about to go watch the Fury fight. I'm excited about that. I'm going back to Oklahoma. Plan on doing a lot of fishing there in the spring. That's what I like to do. So doing that, and then April I'm going back to Philly. So I got a nice setup. I got a gym out there in my barn. We call it the Bro Barn. None of my bros have been out there yet, but hey, it's coming. So got that going. Got a little setup in the garage, a nice sauna. So I ain't got to travel nowhere, man. I feel like when I'm most comfortable is whenever I'm training. I'm around my guys, and that's when I feel like I'm all is right with the world, I guess.
All right, looking forward to the upcoming season. Instagram, Lane Johnson 65, or is it _65? It's Lane Johnson 65.
Yep.
65. Twitter, anything else?
Yeah, that's all
right. Last chance going once. Twice, sold. Three times, sold. And that's the bottom line, because I said so. Lane Johnson, ladies and gentlemen. Lane Johnson.
This has been a Podcast One production. Download new episodes of The Steve Austin Show every Tuesday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
Hey, man, do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. And I bet it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to Geico.com. Get a quote and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit Geico.com today. That's Geico.com.
This is Denny Somach, host of The Rock Podcast. I'm a producer, author, and rock historian, and I want to share with you some of the greatest stories in rock and roll.
Well, Bonzo was the best hard rock drummer ever, hands down. I mean, no one comes within a mile of him.
I saw the Beatles on Ed Sullivan. John Lennon had this wise guy look on his face, just like me and my friends were just a bunch of wise guys, street kids.
The first guitar I ever had was Spanish guitar, and I couldn't really get the hang of it. I was only 13.
I had never written a song before, actually, and so Jim says, okay, everybody go home and write some songs, you know. And so I went home and wrote Light My Fire.
Join me for The Rock Podcast, the only podcast that matters, from Podcast One or wherever you get yours.